From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Full Moon Friday, open lines. Here's what's happening. Federal health officials are investigating a growing outbreak of salmonella that has sickened so many people, about 90 already in 19 states in the District of Columbia. The outbreak is rapid and expanding in numbers of cases. 7 people have been hospitalized, no deaths reported. The salmonella may be linked to sushi, and investigators are focusing on spicy tuna rolls as a high suspect. Here's Jeff Nelkin, our food safety expert. Jeff, I've never been a sushi fan, but in this case, where are they getting this? Restaurants or what?
Well, right now they're, again, you know, looking into it. They're leaning towards, as you mentioned, the spicy tuna roll, but they definitely haven't fingered it to say that it was from that source. And then, of course, the question is, what part? Was it the rice? Was it the fish? Was it, any vegetables that could have been used in the making of it? Sprouts? So, you know, there are a lot of possibilities that they have to look into. About 10% have been hospitalized, and, this form of salmonella is quite rare. Again, you know, the symptoms are diarrhea between 12 and 72 hours onset, and you're looking at symptoms showing themselves between 4 to 7 days. So this is still going to take a little time to further investigate.
And, Jeff, the fact that it's in 19 states, reported in 19 states, what does that tell you about the distribution of this stuff?
Well, that's a very good question, because that's where one of the focus should be, into the distribution. What do these, let's say, locations have in common, or are they buying from a similar supplier? So that definitely would be one of the areas that they have to, you know, run down that information on.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much. Jeff Nelkin, food safety expert. A group of scientists from the Environmental Health Trust are simply refuting a study from last summer which said that cell phones do not lead to the increase of brain cancer in children and teenagers. However, the journal's letter to the editor, the scientist said that there is serious risk of brain tumors associated with using cell phones, and the peer review was flawed. So let's check in with William Thomas, award-winning journalist. What do you think of this, William?
Well, you know, George, here we go. We have another flawed study designed to fail to find a cell phone cancer link that failed to fail. In fact, the original study, this was a revision, the original one, found that cancer is more than doubled. Brain cancer, we're talking here, in children using cell phones. So, and we've seen this before. We've seen the Interphone study, you know, 13 countries around the world, heavily criticized study for rigging the study parameters, and yet it found the risk of brain tumors increasing by 400% in people using cell phones before the age 20. We can go on and on looking at studies that were supposed to find no link and did find links.
Well, are we ever going to get to the bottom of cell phone usage, William?
Well, I think we've been there for some time, George. We have literally thousands of studies. We have authoritative reports like the Bioinitiative report, and we have very alarming statistics. We now know, according to the American Brain Tumor Association, this is 2011, by the way, brain tumors are a leading cause of death in children under age 15 and young adults up to age 34. We're talking, George, nearly 250,000 people in the United States will be diagnosed with a brain tumor this year. So something very big is happening. And I find it very interesting that ABC, which reported this study, is a subsidiary of Walt Disney. You might recall in November 2000, ABC News was about to air a TV program that was expressing concern over cell phone use by children. Walt Disney Company, their owners, announced that it will no longer allow its cartoon characters to be used to market mobile phones. That's great. But 2 years later, in fact, less than 2 years later, Disney and Motorola jointly announced they were teaming up to exploit 6 to 12-year-old children with extremely powerful 2.45 gigahertz cordless phones with other products to follow. So we see the toy companies lining up to exploit children. Now we're looking at toddlers as young as 5 years old who've been allowed to use their parents' mobile phone. And this is really dangerous. Misreported studies like this are very dangerous and very misleading. We're looking at 9 out of 10 children under the age of 16 having a cell phone right now. And yet children under 10 who use a cell phone absorb twice the amount of radiation through their heads as adults, and they absorb it across their entire brain because, of course, their brain case is thinner, and because now we just found out, I learned today preparing for the show, the ear is thinner, so the cell phone is closer to the head. This is Dr. Om Gandhi, a scientist at the University of Utah, and he said children under 10 don't use these phones. I've got a whole list of doctors, Dr. Leonard Hardell and others, saying kids should not use cell phones, period.
Great information. William, thank you so much. Well, the economy here in the United States added 120,000 jobs during March, much lower than the estimates suggested, while the unemployment rate fell slightly to 8.2%. Analysts had predicted a fourth straight month with job growth of more than 200,000. It did not happen. Ever get your wisdom teeth pulled out? Well, there is a lawsuit. Parents have filed a lawsuit. Listen to this story. Having your wisdom teeth pulled should be fairly standard procedure. After all, it's done thousands of times each day throughout the United States. But what makes the death of a 17-year-old Jenny Olenek so frightening is the fact that, well, she was surprised to be out there for an hour and a half. Something was wrong after the mom dropped her off at the dentist. They got a call 15 minutes after Jenny was dropped off from the oral surgeon's office, and they knew something was horribly wrong. The autopsy report reveals that Jenny had died from hypoxia while undergoing anesthesia for a tooth extraction. But this does happen. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. Dr. Greg Corbin with us served as an artillery officer during the Vietnam War. We'll get his take on this. This is a scary story, Greg, isn't it?
Oh, a great tragedy. A beautiful and gifted 17-year-old, and these sorts of things shouldn't happen.
What causes something like this? I mean, my 17-year-old granddaughter, soon to be 18, needs to get her wisdom teeth taken out. I read stories like this, Greg, and it scares the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm. And so it should. I don't know all the details, of course, since I don't have the medical records, but 17-year-olds really are very hard to kill with hypoxia, which is what the autopsy apparently said led to her death. And that 30 years ago, before we had pulse oximeters, these sorts of stories were not that uncommon. And then the oximeters came in, and these stories really pretty much went away because you have to be hypoxic for 4 to 5 minutes before your heart slows down, which is what they said was the first thing they noticed. And about that time, your brain is also starting to have the effects of hypoxia. So it doesn't add up. Obviously, something was wrong. I don't know if they used the oximeter or what, but this sort of thing really should not happen. It's very easy to, when you know you're getting in trouble with a skinny 17-year-old, to be able to establish an airway and make sure that the oxygen is getting to the brain.
Oh, absolutely. And what is it about the wisdom teeth, Greg, that, so many people have them extracted or they're impacted. Sometimes they come in growing the wrong way. Why do we even have these things?
Well, that's a good question. And any time that they tell you routinely to get rid of something that is naturally there, you really have to wonder. In some people, they do cause crowding of the teeth, and you spend a lot of money with your orthodontist getting, the teeth straightened out. And then just about that time, the wisdom teeth come in, and then some people with a small mouth, they will cause, crowding of the teeth, and that'll undo the orthodontic work. But from what I understand, the majority of the people, myself included, everybody told me to get my wisdom teeth out, and I researched this 40, 50 years ago, and I didn't. And so I've really done fine. I really can't say. There are certainly some people that as far as the orthodontic work, it would benefit. But whether it's required and everybody like is recommended, I can't say. I know it's debated.
Okay, very good. Greg, thank you. Dr. Greg Ford. Scary situation. You've heard of chicken soup for the soul. Well, how about this part of it? Messages from heaven. We're going to talk with Amy Newmark about this next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Amy Newmark led a very successful 30-year career as a Wall Street analyst, specializing in detecting fraudulent stocks, a hedge fund manager, a business executive, and the director of several public companies before she joined the management team of Chicken Soup for the Soul. That was several years ago. She's a publisher and editor of the entire line now and author of many of the books. We're going to talk about Messages from Heaven. Amy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
By the way, this series, Chicken Soup for the Soul, one of the most successful books in the series of books ever, I think, in print. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think it is the most successful series in history, unless it has been recently surpassed by Harry Potter, but that would be the only thing that could be bigger than it.
How did the whole concept come about?
It started because Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen were motivational speakers, and they used the power of storytelling in their motivational speeches, because as we all know, storytelling is really a very effective way of passing on wisdom and advice, and it has been that way throughout history. And their storytelling was so successful that people suggested to them that they take their motivational stories and put them together in a book. And thus was created the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, which I think they ran off 2,000 copies and sold them from the trunks of their cars and went on to sell 8 million copies.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I love those stories. Those are miraculous stories all by themselves, Amy, aren't they?
Yeah, it shows that miracles can happen, but it was an awfully good idea, and that's why we have more than 200 different titles now, and we're going into our 19th year in business.
Fantastic. Did you ever think, leaving the world of Wall Street and corporations, did you ever think you'd be doing something like this?
I had no idea. I mean, when you're on Wall Street, you are dealing with human emotions also, basically
all the time, yeah.
Fear and greed.
And
now I'm just dealing with the whole panoply of human emotions. But it's a big change, but I really do love it.
Tell me about Messages from Heaven. What's the message?
You know, I put this book together because we receive thousands of stories every year from people who report on these miraculous signs from beyond, the amazing connections that they have with their deceased loved ones. And we've been sprinkling these stories into our other books on various topics, on love and grieving and recovery, some of our Christian books. And last year I noticed that there were all those bestsellers about people who went to heaven and came back. There was Heaven is for Real, and you know, all of those books. And I thought, wow, I am really missing the boat here. We try to give people books that reflect what we're sent. I mean, I feel that the stories that are submitted to us are a reflection of what people would like to read also. And I realized we were not giving people a book on messages from heaven or messages from beyond. And clearly they wanted that. And so we were able to put one together very easily. We had thousands of submissions for the book, and we only needed 101 stories. So we really have the cream of the crop in the book.
After reading all these stories, these very miraculous stories, what conclusion have you come to about what this means, what it all could mean?
Well, first of all, let me say it's not a religious book.
Right.
It's a book that's for everyone. I'm a pretty skeptical person. I mean, I was, you know, ferreting out fraud on Wall Street. So I always look at things with a very skeptical eye. I check my facts. I'm a very pragmatic person. And yet, there are an awful lot of stories in this book that I just can't explain away. Mm-hmm. So I am very open-minded about this, and I'm pretty sure that if I were in the same position as many of these writers are, and I had lost somebody at the wrong time, or I had lost a child or a parent, and luckily I am not in that position, I would probably be looking for these signs too, and seeing them where other people might try to explain them away as coincidence.
These messages from heaven, who sends them down to us?
You know, I think that most of the stories aren't even saying that they necessarily come from the conventional heaven with angels and it's up there and there are pearly gates. And I think that most of them are really reporting more on signs they received from their deceased loved ones from beyond. And beyond could be right around us. It doesn't have to be the Christian heaven that we're all familiar with. I think that most of them are just saying that these weird things have happened to them. The people who are very religious, they will wrap their religious beliefs around the experience that they had, because that is a way for them to make sense of what happened. But the people who don't have religious backgrounds take a more spiritual or just a wondering approach to these events, and they don't really define them or explain them according to the teachings of a religion.
Even with your pragmatic background, were you always a believer in the other side, what might be beyond?
I hadn't really thought about it before I came to Chicken Soup for the Soul and I started reading all these stories. And I don't really want to take a position. I am really presenting to people the stories of these 101 people who are in this book. But as I said before, some of these stories I can't explain. And I know that our writers are not lying, because we are very, very careful. Most of the people in this book are writers who we've known for years, who have written for us before. And what they are reporting really did happen to them. Now, whether what happened to them could be explained away scientifically or could be explained as a coincidence, that's a second level of reasoning. But I do know that they are reporting accurately an experience that they had. And I have always believed that there are things out there that we don't understand. I have personally experienced occasional extrasensory perception moments with other people. Who's to say that could only be confined to living people? I guess it's possible that could exist also with people who have passed on. I don't really know. I just know that the stories in this book are pretty awe-inspiring, and they really make you wonder.
When you read the stories, Amy, did you have one of those oh wow moments on some of them?
I had the oh wow moment on a lot of them. It is filled with oh wow moments, this book.
It truly is amazing how these things can happen to people from all walks of life. These incredible miracles, these stories from beyond. We get calls, we'll take calls next hour, and we may get a whole bunch of these calls. But people who, you know, were going over the side of a road and a hand reaches onto their steering wheel and pulls them back on the road. And there's nobody else in the car. It's just them. And how do you explain things like that? Or I got a call one day from someone who said that he was swimming out in the ocean, and he swam out too far. The currents just kind of like pulled him away farther and farther. And he said, "My gosh, I was exhausted. I knew I was going to drown. I was going underwater. I was down." And he said, "It was so crystal clear and the sky was blue. I saw a hand break through the top of the water and reach down and pull me out." And I said, "I was saved. Oh my God, I was saved." I turned around after I was done coughing and everything else to thank that person who came swimming out to save me. And there was nobody there. There's no way that a person could swim out there, pull him out, and in seconds simply disappear. Then I thought for a moment, oh my God, that guy drowned. But he didn't. He was just never there. It's almost impossible to explain that other than to say they're miracles. It's chicken soup for the soul, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is I just posted on our website, chickensoup.com, an opportunity for people to submit stories for a book I'm going to put out next year about angels among us.
Oh, and they are. Amy, stay with us. More to come on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about Messages from Heaven, part of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Amy Newmark, publisher-editor of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. We're talking about the latest Messages from Heaven. Let's look at some of these stories, Amy, that you might be able to share with us. Did any of them scare you or give you goosebumps?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think any of them scared me. What's interesting about these stories is that they are always warm and peaceful, and they are not people reporting that they've been scared by a ghost or that they've had any unpleasant feelings from their contact with their deceased loved ones. They always report feeling warmth and comfort and peace. So I'll tell you one of the stories that I love, and it's probably because I am a mother and my kids are in their early 20s now, so they finally decided that I'm not an idiot. And it's a story that is called Mom Knows Best. And it's about a woman, Carolyn Hall, who had abdominal surgery. And 10 days after the surgery, she was still in agonizing pain, so much pain that she was actually basically glued to a chair in her living room one night. For the whole night, she couldn't move, and her husband found her there in the morning and called the doctor. And she went in to see the doctor, and he said, "Oh, you just have pneumonia from inactivity after surgery." And she said, "I really don't think that's what it is. My mom told me to tell you I have blood clots." And he said, "Is she a doctor?" And Carolyn says, "No, she's been dead for 8 years.
Oh my.
But while she was stuck in that chair all night, completely immobilized by the pain, she had felt this flood of warmth and love spread over her, and she heard her mother's voice say, "Tell Dr. Hughes you've got blood clots." So the doctor reluctantly had her checked out after insisting it was pneumonia, and they actually found a whole nest of blood clots in her lungs, and if any one of them had been released, which it was about to do, she would have died. They were called silent blood clots. Jeez. So she was put into the hospital. They saved her life, and the doctor came by the next day and said, "I just want to know if your mom has anything else that she thinks I should know about." And I love that story because Carolyn has no medical training whatsoever. There was no way that she could have ever thought about blood clots. It wasn't something that she would ever have conceived of. So I think that's one of those stories that I have a very hard time explaining away.
Did this make the doctor a believer? I bet it did.
Oh, it absolutely did. Yeah, she did say that in her story. The doctor really did believe her. I have another story that gives everybody goosebumps, and it's actually from one of our editors.
All right.
And I was telling you that I really do believe that these things happen to people because I know these writers. And this is an editor in our own office who had this amazing experience and was embarrassed to even tell me about it. But I pried it out of her, and I said, "You have to write up this story for the book." So Jeannie wrote up her story. It happened when she was 18 years old. She was a freshman in college. She was very close to her grandparents. Her grandfather was the super in an apartment building in Queens, in New York. She spent a lot of time with her grandparents, and one night she had a dream that her grandfather, she was staying at her grandfather's house or his apartment, and he woke her up, and he told her and her grandmother that they had to flee the apartment and go down to the basement, which of course was his domain, being the super. They went down to the basement, and it smelled really funny. It didn't smell the way it normally smelled. And they were running away from some ominous presence, and the grandmother couldn't keep up, so the grandfather told Jeannie, "Put your grandmother in this little space under the staircase, hide her in there, and come back for her later." So Jeannie put her grandmother in the space under the stairs and then turned and looked, and a huge shadow appeared, and then she saw a massive silhouette lift her grandfather up and stab him through the heart. And then Jeannie woke up crying in bed and realized she had just had a nightmare. So she went off to school, and midway through a lecture that afternoon at college, she all of a sudden stood up in the middle of class and said, "My grandfather just died." And she ran out of there. She went home. This was before cell phones, so she couldn't get the news until she actually got home. Went home, learned that her grandfather had died from a massive heart attack at the exact moment that she had stood up during class. So somehow her grandfather the night before must have caused this dream to occur where she saw this intruder stabbing him in the chest. Maybe her grandfather had chest pains the night before. So it turned out that her grandfather had actually come in from working outside that afternoon. He had given her grandmother a big kiss, and he had laid down on a daybed, crossed his arms like he was in a coffin, and closed his eyes and had a massive heart attack and died, like he knew he was going to. Oh. And then a few months later, Jeannie's grandmother had a heart attack, but a milder one. Jeannie went to visit her in the hospital, and her grandmother grabbed at her and said, "Thank goodness you're okay. I thought you were dead. I thought he got you." And Jeannie said, "Who got me?" And her grandmother said, the man that killed Pop in the basement. Jeannie, you saved me. Yes. You hid me under the staircase." Well, Jeannie had never told anybody about her dream because she didn't even want to talk about it because she thought it was so weird. It turns out her grandmother had the exact same dream. So Jeannie's conclusion is that her grandfather sent her that dream as he was having the chest pains, you know, hours before he died, and wanted her to look out for her grandmother and sent the same message to her grandmother. So that's a pretty incredible story, and I know the writer, and I know it's true.
That is a great story indeed. Do these stories have a common denominator or theme?
No. They're the only common denominator is usually the person who has received the message from their deceased loved one has a sense of peace and acceptance. No one's looking for closure here necessarily, because closure would mean we're done. People are usually looking for some kind of continuing connection with their loved one. So all of the stories are fairly peaceful and happy because they get the connection and they're happy to have it. But the types of stories vary considerably. There are some common themes in this whole area of after-death communication, ADC, and we have stories on all of those common themes. Often people will write about something in nature that they believe is a sign from beyond, and those are the stories that people would find easier to explain as coincidences. But those are when people see a butterfly, which is a very popular topic, or a bird or a flower blooms at the wrong time of year, weird occurrences with electricity, smells that remind them of the dead person, which just appear out of nowhere, pennies that show up, or these days with inflation, we're seeing stories about dimes instead of pennies.
Pretty soon there'll be quarters, then.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, the stories that I love are the ones where they get a great piece of advice from their deceased loved one, including life-saving advice like that blood clot story. Or they are told where to find something that is lost, and only that person who is deceased knows where it is. And the living person in a dream usually is told where to find it. People describe dream visitations. They also describe visitations from the dead that they have when they're awake. We also get a lot of stories about knowing the exact moment when somebody is dying. Those are very, very common. Those are the main themes that we have. And then we also have a few stories from people who go to heaven and come back, although we don't get as many stories about that as we get stories about people having these connections with their deceased loved ones.
Well, and you know, the first thing you have to do is look for natural reasons for why these things are occurring, or why people are telling these stories. But if you can't get those answers naturally, you're going to have to assume that there's something very special or supernatural about these events, don't you?
Yeah, that's why I told you those two stories, because I can't find any, I don't have a scientific explanation for those. There's nothing coincidental about them.
Right.
I just can't explain those. The stories where somebody sees a butterfly and the butterfly is out in the wrong season, or it's in the wrong place, or it spends an hour with the person, you could explain that away. Although the people who have the experience with the butterfly that, you know, sits on their shoulder for an hour while they're at their mother's grave, those people are going to be very sure that they really did have some kind of message from heaven.
And, you know, I've always said I don't believe in coincidences, Amy. I think things happen for a reason. I think fate, whatever it might be, kicks in. And it could very well be the case in all these when people see a butterfly and maybe it was grandma's favorite little insect or something, or
yeah,
or anything like that.
We get a lot of those, but we get stories where there is just no explanation. I don't know if you have time for another one right now before
the
break.
Oh, of course. No, yeah,
here's another really interesting one. This is from a woman named Grace, and she, as a six-year-old child, she saw a young soldier standing in her bedroom one night. She lived in a very dysfunctional family that was filled with anger. So in the morning, she went and she told her parents and her siblings that she had seen this young soldier standing by her bed, and everybody started yelling at her, so she just dropped it. She never brought it up again, although she kept seeing him. And several years later, when she was, I think, in her teens, she discovered that she had had a brother who had died when she was just a few months old, and he had been in the military. The uniform that she saw on the soldier was the exact uniform that he would have worn in his unit. And she said that he seemed gentle and kind, but also a little bit sad. And she went through the rest of her life knowing that she had this guardian angel by her side. So, again, there was no way she could have known she had this brother. And it took her years to discover why she was seeing this young man.
Amy, have you found it's human nature that most people want to believe in these stories rather than try to be the skeptic and put them down?
If you're in a position where you've lost someone who you're very close to, of course you want to believe these stories, and it's not up to me to judge. I just try to get stories that I know really happened to people, and then we'll let the readers judge. But when you read 101 of these in our Messages from Heaven book, it's pretty hard to remain skeptical. You might be skeptical of a story here and there, but it's pretty hard to ignore 101 stories. You cannot explain these away.
What did you find with the 101 stories and the ones that never made it into the book? The visitations of the departed ones come primarily from what? Dreams at nighttime, daytime? Were you able to, you know, categorize these?
They were more in dreams. They definitely did happen in dreams. Sometimes the people were awake. We also occasionally will get a ghost story. And I'm not sure that really fits in this book, but I put in one that I would really call a ghost story more than a message from heaven story. But I think that, well, gosh, we had a lot of daytime ones too, though. Like,
did you? So there's a variety here.
Yeah, here's a daytime one that is pretty hard to explain. This woman had her little kid, just a toddler, in daycare. And one day she got a phone call that her mother-in-law had died. So she went over to daycare to pick up her son, and the babysitter said, "Nikki did something strange a few minutes ago. He was sitting out back in the sandbox, and all of a sudden he dropped his favorite truck and looked up at the air and said, 'Bye-bye, Grandma, bye-bye, Grandma, bye-bye.'" And the babysitter said, it felt really strange. I felt like there was somebody else here. So I just thought I should tell you. At that point, the mother said, what time did it happen? The babysitter said, 4:30. The mother said, that's when Nikki's grandmother died. Because, as she said, I just got the call, and that's why I've come to pick him up. We have to go. So she sat her son down, and she asked him why he said goodbye to his grandmother. And he said, well, she came to see me because she said she was going away, and she wanted to tell me that she loves me very much. And the woman asked her son, well, where was your grandma? And he said, well, she was outside over there floating in the air. And then she said, well, what did grandma look like? And he said, well, she was wearing a dress with little flowers all over it, and she had wires on her arms. And she wanted to kiss me, but she had blood on her mouth, so she said she shouldn't kiss me. Well, the mother then talked to the people at the hospital, and, of course, at the time that the grandmother died, she was wearing a hospital gown with little flowers on it. She had intravenous tubes in her arms, hence the wires that the little boy described. And as they had pulled the respirator out of her mouth, they had torn her lip, and she had some blood on her mouth. And it's exactly how the little boy described the apparition. So that was a daytime visitation, and that was a goodbye visitation. And we do have a whole chapter in the book about people saying goodbye. And it's interesting how people get these moment of death visitations.
Do you find that most of these visitations are coming to comfort the living or to give them some kind of warning about something that might be impending?
Most of the ones in this book are about comforting the living. However, we do get really good ones, too, where a mother or father is coming back to warn a grown child about something. We had a great one where a woman was driving her daughter to do errands after school, and she was coming up to a traffic light, and she heard a man's voice say, stop at the light. Even if it's green, stop at the light. So she stopped, and the light turned red, then it turned green again, and she sat there again, and her daughter was saying, Mom, why aren't we going? And she kept hearing the voice saying, don't go. And right after her daughter said, Mom, an SUV came blazing through the intersection, you know, from the other side. And they would have been hit broadside on her daughter's side of the car if they had gone forward with the green light. And after it happened, the little girl said, how did you know not to go? And the mother said, I heard your grandfather's voice telling me not to go. So we do have stories like that where parents do keep their children from danger and the children listen to them.
It's a fine line, though, Amy, I think, between that, the visitation of a departed one, and as you're working on, and you'll probably find out on your next work, these angelic interventions.
I know, because in this case, you could say that was an angelic intervention, but since she knew who it was, I decided it was a message from heaven because it was a message from her loved one.
Right.
The drowning incident where it's a stranger who is the possible angel, that I would put in the angel book. But I agree with you. There's crossover. There's definitely crossover between the two topics.
There sure is. So stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back in a moment with your phone calls and your stories. We're talking about Chicken Soup for the Soul, Messages from Heaven, Amy Newmark, our guest, and their website is chickensoup.com. And, of course, it's one of the most successful series of publications of books ever recorded in the history of mankind. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM.